A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's got a whole thing about optical media this week, and it starts where a lot of his best prompts start, with a personal purchasing odyssey. He was on a DSL connection that made cloud backup basically impossible, so he went hunting for Blu-ray and MDISC as cold storage. The discs themselves turned out to be excellent for that, but the surprise came when he found the best selection and the best prices on Amazon Japan. Which led him to the real question. Japan builds bullet trains and humanoid robots, and yet it's still absolutely swimming in shiny plastic discs. He wants to know why Japan has stayed a holdout for optical media, whether this is a dying practice even among enthusiasts, and then he points at something that's been nagging at me too. Israel, where he lives, has a strange relationship with the fax machine. Japan has the same thing. Both are cutting-edge economies, and both have become the last footholds for technology that everyone else buried years ago. Why do the most advanced societies hoard the most obsolete tech?
That paradoxes the whole episode, really. And it's not a coincidence that Daniel found the good discs on Amazon Japan, because Japan didn't just keep optical media alive, it built an entire domestic ecosystem around it that the rest of the world quietly dismantled.
So let's unpack what Daniel stumbled into. The first thing to understand is that Japan's optical media persistence isn't a quirk. It's not nostalgia. It's not technophobia. It's a systemic outcome of three forces stacking on top of each other. Cultural, infrastructural, and market. And the M2C angle matters here, because it turns optical media from a legacy format into a genuine archival tool. Pioneer actually sold a Blu-ray disc designed to last 100 years, marketed specifically for tax record storage. That's not a gimmick. That's a company saying, "We know the government requires you to keep these records for decades, and we built a disc that will outlive your filing cabinet."
And the 100-year claim isn't just marketing vapor. The reason MDISC is different comes down to the recording layer. Standard writable discs use an organic dye that degrades with heat, humidity, and UV light. MDISC uses an inorganic recording layer. It's essentially a rock-like material that the laser physically alters. You're not staining a surface, you're engraving a stone. Accelerated testing puts the archival life at something like 1,000 years. Even if you're skeptical of that number and cut it by 90%, you've still got a disk that will comfortably outlive every hard drive, every flash drive, and every cloud account you've ever owned.
So when Pioneer markets a 100-year Blu-ray for tax records, they're actually being conservative. The Japanese government requires certain records to be kept for a long time, and the standard answer used to be paper in a warehouse. Optical media gives you searchable, compact, stable storage that doesn't rot. It's a rational choice.
It's a rational choice in a society that has a very specific relationship with physical media, and this is where the cultural wiring comes in. Japan never fully abandoned the idea that you own the thing you paid for. You buy the Blu-ray box set, it sits on your shelf, you can watch it whenever you want, it doesn't disappear when a licensing deal expires. Streaming catalogs in Japan have always been patchier than in the US. Rights get carved up, shows vanish, regional restrictions apply. If you're a fan of a specific drama or anime series, the only guaranteed way to watch it in 5 years is to own the disc.
That's the offline collection habit. It's not just about watching, it's about archiving and displaying. The box set is a trophy. It says something about who you are. And Japan has a long tradition of that, going back to the rental shop culture. The way people collected VHS tapes, then DVDs, then Blu-rays. The shelf full of discs is a point of pride.
And then there's the infrastructural side, which I think is the part most Western coverage misses completely. Japan has excellent broadcast television. NHK and the commercial networks produce a huge amount of content that people actually want to keep. And for decades, the standard household appliance wasn't a DVR, it was a Blu-ray recorder. You record your shows directly onto a disc, you label it, you file it. The recorder is built into the living room setup the way a cable box is in the US.
That's the piece that doesn't translate. In the US, recording broadcast TV was always a bit of a hack. You had VCRs with blinking clocks, then TiVo, then everything moved to streaming. In Japan, the Blu-ray recorder was the default. It's still a standard appliance. The market is declining, sure, but it's declining from a much higher baseline. Fujitsu released a laptop with an internal Blu-ray drive, which in most of the world would be absurd. In Japan, it's just a feature.
And the market data backs this up. Akihabara stores sold out of Windows 10 installation drives. Think about that. Windows 10 installation media on a disc sold out in the electronics district of Tokyo. In a country where you can get fiber internet in a mountain village, the demand isn't coming from people who don't have broadband. It's coming from people who want the physical object.
Daniel's Amazon Japan discovery fits this exactly. He found an insanely well-developed range of optical media at competitive prices. That's not an export niche. That's a domestic market with enough depth to support multiple brands, multiple formats, multiple price points. The selection exists because Japanese consumers keep buying.
And I want to be careful here because the misconception is that this is backwardness. It's not. Japan isn't clinging to discs because it failed to adopt streaming. Japan has some of the best internet infrastructure on the planet. The fiber penetration is extraordinary. The mobile networks are ahead of most of the West. This is a country that could abandon physical media tomorrow and feel no infrastructural pain. It chooses not to.
That's the key distinction. It's not a lag, it's a preference. And the preference is shaped by specific practical needs. Archival stability for tax records. Offline ownership for collectors. Broadcast recording for television fans. Each of those is a real problem that optical media solves better than the alternatives in that specific context.
The MDIA-C is the purest example. If you're backing up family photos, you could put them in the cloud. But the cloud is a subscription. You stop paying, the account closes, the data goes away. You could put them on a hard drive. Hard drives fail. The average spinning drive has a lifespan measured in years, not decades. You could use flash storage. Flash degrades when it sits unpowered for long periods. MDISC sits on a shelf for 100 years and doesn't care. It's the closest thing we have to a cave painting that you can read with a Blu-ray drive.
I've said that before, and I'll stand by it. The MDISC is a cave painting readable with a Blu-ray drive. And that's not a joke. That's the actual engineering. You're physically altering an inorganic layer. The data is etched into the disc, the way a chisel marks stone. It doesn't need power. It doesn't need a server. It doesn't need a company to stay in business. It just needs a drive that can read it.
And drives that can read Blu-ray are going to be around for a very long time because the installed base is enormous. Even if they stopped making new drives tomorrow, there are tens of millions of them in the world. The format will remain readable for decades. That's a different kind of durability than a proprietary cloud format that could be deprecated next year.
So Japan's holdout makes sense on its own terms. But Daniel's question pushes further. He sees the parallel with fax machines, and he's right too. Israel and Japan both have this strange fax persistence, and the reasons are different, but they rhyme.
Israel's fax culture is something I saw up close for years. The healthcare system runs on fax. Medical records, referrals, lab results, insurance forms. The reason isn't nostalgia. It's that fax is considered legally and practically secure in a way that email isn't. A fax goes from one machine to another over a phone line. It's hard to intercept, it leaves a physical receipt, and the transmission is point to point. Email bounces through servers, sits in inboxes, gets forwarded, gets hacked. For a medical referral, the fax is the safer channel.
And there's a legal layer. In Israel, certain documents are considered delivered when the fax confirmation prints. That's a legally recognized timestamp. You can't get that from an email. So the fax machine survives because it solves a specific problem, legal proof of delivery, that newer tech hasn't fully replaced. The cost of switching the entire healthcare system to secure digital messaging is enormous, and the fax still works.
Japan's fax persistence has a different flavor. It's tied to document authenticity norms and an aging population. There's a cultural expectation that a formal document should be handwritten or at least physically transmitted. A fax document carries weight that an email doesn't. And the older generation, which is a huge demographic in Japan, grew up with fax as the primary business communication tool. They're not going to switch to Slack.
And Japan's government offices still use fax for a lot of official communication. There was a famous story a few years back about a government minister trying to reduce fax use and getting significant pushback. The fax machine is embedded in the workflow. It's not a relic, it's infrastructure.
The broader principle here is that legacy tech thrives in advanced societies when it solves a specific problem that newer tech doesn't fully address. Archival stability, legal compliance, security, document authenticity. When the legacy tech still does the job and the cost of switching is high, the rational choice is to keep using it.
And here's the irony Daniel's pointing at. Cutting-edge societies have the resources to maintain legacy systems, so they don't feel the pressure to abandon them. A developing nation that never built a fax infrastructure jumps straight to mobile messaging. It has nothing to preserve. Israel and Japan built robust fax networks decades ago, and those networks still work. The cost of ripping them out is higher than the cost of maintaining them.
It's the leapfrog effect in reverse. Developing nations leapfrog old tech because they never had it. Advanced nations carry old tech forward because they invested in it and it still functions. The fax machine in Israel isn't a sign of backwardness. It's a sign that the system works well enough that nobody wants to pay for the transition.
And the same logic applies to Blu-ray in Japan. The recorders are already in homes. The discs are already on shelves. The broadcast infrastructure is already built. The switching cost to pure streaming is real, and for a lot of people the benefit isn't compelling enough.
Now, is the practice dying? Yes, but slower in Japan than everywhere else. Global Blu-ray sales have been declining for years. Streaming has eaten the enthusiast market. Even collectors are buying fewer discs. But Japan's decline is shallower, because the baseline was higher and the cultural and practical forces are still in place. It's not that Japan is immune to streaming. It's that Japan has more reasons to keep buying discs than most other markets.
And the M-Disc angle suggests something interesting about the future. As data storage needs grow, and as people start to realize that cloud storage is a subscription rather than a purchase, cold storage on optical media might see a resurgence. Not just in Japan, everywhere.
The cloud is convenient, but it's not permanent. Companies shut down services. Accounts get locked. Data gets lost in migration. The people who care most about long-term preservation are starting to look at optical media again. The M-Disc is the best version of that. It's cheap, it's stable, it's standardized. You burn it, you label it, you put it in a drawer, and you forget about it for 20 years. Then you pull it out and it still works.
That's the pitch. And it's a pitch that resonates in Japan because the culture already values physical ownership and archival permanence. The MDISC slots into an existing mindset. In the US, the mindset has to be rebuilt from scratch.
And that's why the Amazon Japan discovery is so telling. Daniel went looking for optical media and found the best selection in Japan. Not because Japan is behind, but because Japan maintained the market infrastructure. The demand never collapsed the way it did elsewhere. The suppliers stayed in business. The product lines stayed deep.
Let's talk about the Fujitsu laptop for a second, because it's a perfect microcosm. In 2025, Fujitsu released a laptop with an internal Blu-ray drive. In most of the world, that's a feature nobody asks for. In Japan, it's a selling point. There are enough people who want to watch discs on a laptop, or burn discs from a laptop, that Fujitsu bothered to engineer it. That's a market signal.
The Akihabara Windows 10 drive sellout is the same signal from the consumer side. Microsoft stopped selling Windows 10 on physical media in most markets years ago. But in Japan, the demand was there. People wanted the install disk. So stores stocked them and they sold out. It's not that Japanese consumers don't know about USB drives or downloads, they want the disk.
The disk is the point. It's the object. It's the thing you hold in your hand and put on a shelf. And that's the cultural wiring we keep coming back to. Japan has a collecting culture that extends far beyond media. Figures, cards, stamps, model kits. The physical object has value. The Blu-ray box set is part of that culture.
The box set in Japan is often a beautiful object. The packaging, the booklets, the bonus discs, the art cards, it's designed to be collected and displayed. Western releases have largely stripped that down. The Japanese releases are still made for collectors.
When Daniel asks why Japan is a holdout, the answer has layers. The cultural layer is the collecting instinct and the desire for offline ownership. The infrastructural layer is the broadcast recording ecosystem. The market layer is the sustained demand that keeps manufacturers and retailers invested. And the archival layer is the MDIC and its 100 years stability. All four are real, and all four reinforce each other.
The fax parallel is the same structure. Cultural norms around document authenticity. Infrastructural investment in fax networks. Market inertia in healthcare and government. Legal requirements that fax satisfies. It's the same four layers, just applied to a different technology.
The unifying insight is that legacy tech persists when it solves a specific problem that newer tech doesn't fully address, and when the switching cost is higher than the maintenance cost. In advanced societies, both conditions are often met. The old tech is good enough, and the new tech isn't compelling enough to justify the disruption.
There's a knock-on effect that's easy to miss. Advanced societies have the engineering talent to keep legacy systems running. They can maintain the fax networks, they can keep manufacturing optical drives, they can support the old protocols. A developing nation doesn't have that luxury, so the legacy tech dies faster in places that can't afford to maintain it and survives longer in places that can.
That's the paradox in a nutshell. The most advanced societies are the ones with the resources to keep old technology alive. They don't feel the pressure to abandon it because they can afford to maintain it. The fax machine survives in Israel and Japan precisely because those countries are advanced enough to keep it working.
The same goes for optical media in Japan. The country is advanced enough to have world-class streaming infrastructure and advanced enough to keep a thriving optical media market running alongside it. The two coexist because the society can afford both.
Is this a dying practice? The honest answer is that it's shrinking, but it's not dying. It's becoming a niche, and niches can be very durable. Vinyl records were supposed to die in the 90s. They came back. Film cameras were supposed to die. They're still here. The Blu-ray in Japan is going to be around for a long time because the people who use it have real reasons to keep using it.
The MDISC is the sleeper in all of this. It's not a legacy technology in the same way. It's a superior archival medium that happens to use an older form factor. The disk is old, but the engineering is modern. The inorganic recording layer is a real innovation. It's the best cold storage medium we have for the price.
That's the part Daniel got right from the start. He was on DSL. Cloud backup was impossible, and he turned to optical media as a practical solution. He discovered that it wasn't just a workaround. It was better for that specific use case. The MDC is more stable than any hard drive, any flash drive, any cloud account. For cold storage, it wins.
The 100-year pioneer disk for tax records is the proof that this isn't just a hobbyist thing. It's a government-grade archival solution. Pioneer built it because there was a real market for it. Japanese businesses need to keep tax records for decades, and a disk that lasts 100 years is a better answer than a stack of paper in a warehouse.
The next time you see a fax machine or a Blu-ray, ask what problem it's solving that the cloud can't. That's the question Daniel's prompt is really about. Not why old tech exists, but why it persists in specific places for specific reasons.
The answer is almost always more rational than it looks. The fax machine in an Israeli hospital is there because it's secure and legally recognized. The Blu-ray recorder in a Japanese living room is there because it captures broadcast TV and produces a permanent, ownable copy. The MDISC in a drawer is there because it'll outlive everything else in the house.
The advanced society doesn't abandon old tech because it's old. It abandons old tech when the new tech is better enough to justify the switch. And in these cases, the new tech isn't better enough, not yet.
The cloud is better for convenience. It's better for access from anywhere. It's better for collaboration. But it's worse for permanence, worse for ownership, worse for archival stability. And in Japan, those latter three matter a lot.
Japan has become the world's optical media holdout, not despite being advanced, but because it's advanced enough to have both the infrastructure and the cultural framework to keep the old tech viable. The discs aren't a relic. They're a choice.
The fax machine in Israel is the same story in a different register. The choice to keep fax is a choice to prioritize security and legal certainty over convenience. It's a rational trade-off, even if it looks absurd from the outside.
The absurdity is the surface. The logic is underneath. And that's what makes this a interesting question rather than just a curiosity. The same forces that make Japan a leader in robotics also make it a holdout for optical media. The same forces that make Israel a leader in cybersecurity also make it a holdout for facts. The capacity for innovation and the capacity for preservation aren't opposites. They're the same capacity pointed in different directions.
That's the thing I want to leave with. Legacy tech persistence isn't a failure of innovation. It's a sign that the society has the resources to maintain multiple technological generations at once. It's a luxury, not a lag. The developing world leapfrogs because it has to. The advanced world preserves because it can.
The next time you see a fax machine in a Jerusalem clinic or a Blu-ray recorder in a Tokyo apartment, you're not looking at backwardness. You're looking at a society that decided the old tool still works, and the new tool isn't worth the disruption. That's not failure. That's judgment.
Sometimes the old tool is better. The MDISC is the clearest example. It's not a compromise. It's the best cold storage medium we have. The fact that it uses a disk format from the early 2000s doesn't make it obsolete. It makes it accessible. Billions of drives can read it. The format is standardized. The manufacturing is mature. The MDISC is old tech done right.
That's the phrase. Old tech done right. The fax machine in Israel is old tech done right for a specific legal and security context. The Blu-ray recorder in Japan is old tech done right for a specific cultural and infrastructural context. The M-Disc is old tech done right for archival storage. None of them are going anywhere soon.
The market agrees. Amazon Japan's optical media selection is deep because the demand is real. Fujitsu shipped the laptop with the internal drive because the demand is real. Akihabara sold out of Windows 10 discs because the demand is real. This isn't a phantom market. It's a sustained, rational, and surprisingly durable one.
Daniel's purchasing odyssey turned out to be a window into something bigger. The discs he bought on Amazon Japan weren't just a backup solution. They were evidence of a whole technological ecosystem that the rest of the world abandoned, but Japan kept alive. And the reason Japan kept it alive is that it still works.
The commercial skip. That's the part you're missing. Every Japanese Blu-ray recorder I ever touched had a button that automatically marked the commercials and skipped them during playback. It'd actually edit them out of the recording or flag them so they'd jump over clean. That feature was standard. In the rest of the world, you had to buy a separate box or hack the firmware. In Japan, it was just there. Because recording broadcast TV was the primary use case, and the commercials were the problem. The whole machine was built around the idea that you'd record a show, strip the ads, and keep the clean copy on a disc. That's not archiving. That's curation.
That's the ritual. The recording, the editing, the labeling, the filing. It's not just about having the show, it's about the process of making the disc. The finished product is a trophy. You made it, you curated it. It's on your shelf with your other trophies. Streaming doesn't give you that. Streaming gives you a cue.
The commercial skip feature is a perfect example of the infrastructural depth. The manufacturers build the machines around the Japanese broadcast environment. The feature set assumed you were recording terrestrial TV, editing out commercials, and archiving to disk. That's not a generic DVR. That's a purpose-built tool for a specific cultural practice.
That practice is still alive. It's shrinking, but it's not dead. The people who grew up with it are still doing it. The Blu-ray recorder is still a standard appliance in Japanese homes. The market is declining, but the installed base is enormous. The habit is entrenched.
I worked in a Japanese electronics retailer in the early 2000s, Akihabara. Not the big chains, a small shop that sold mostly to locals. We stocked Laserdisc players long after the rest of the world had moved on. Minidisc, too. The customers weren't confused. They knew exactly what they wanted. They wanted the disc. They wanted the physical object. They'd come in and buy blank mini discs by the spindle. For what? For recording their own mixes. For archiving radio shows. The same instinct. Own the thing. Hold the thing. Put it on a shelf.
The instinct doesn't change. The format changes, but the behavior persists. Laserdisc to minidisc to Blu-ray. It's the same drive to own and archive and display. The technology updates, but the cultural pattern stays.
That's why Japan is the holdout. The cultural pattern was never disrupted the way it was in the West. In the US, streaming arrived and basically wiped out the physical media collecting culture in a few years. In Japan, streaming arrived and coexisted. The collecting culture was strong enough to survive the disruption.
I still have a Japanese Blu-ray recorder. Imported it years ago. Works fine. It's got the commercial skip. It's got a hard drive inside for temporary storage, and you dump the good stuff to disk. The interface is all in Japanese, which I don't read, but I memorize the menu paths. It's a beautiful machine, over-engineered in the way Japanese consumer electronics used to be. And I've got an MDC burner too. Back up the family photos every few months. Paranoid, but satisfying. Burn the disk, label it with a marker, put it in a fireproof box. Done.
The fireproof box is the final layer. The disk is stable, but it's not indestructible. Fire, flood, physical damage. The archival chain includes the storage conditions. The M-disk in a fireproof box in a cool, dry place is about as close to permanent as consumer storage gets.
The fact that Hilbert does this isn't unusual. The M-disk market is small but real. People who care about family photos, legal documents, tax records, they burn the disks, they store them, they sleep better. It's the same logic as the Pioneer 100-year tax disk. The data matters and the medium is chosen to match the timescale.
The question I keep coming back to is whether the disk will outlast the drive. I've got the burner now. But in 20 years, will I be able to buy a drive that reads M disk? The disk lasts 1,000 years, but the hardware to read it might not last 20. That's the weak link.
That's the real vulnerability. The medium is permanent, but the interface is not. The M-Disk-E needs a Blu-ray drive. Blu-ray drives are still manufactured, but the format will eventually fade. The disk will outlive the reader. That's the archival paradox. The data is safe, but access to the data isn't guaranteed.
That's why the serious archivists keep multiple drives. A working Blu-ray drive in a drawer, a spare in a box, maybe a third in a different location. The disk is the storage medium, but the drive is the key. You need both. The disk without the drive is a very stable, very permanent paperweight.
I've got two drives, one in the machine, one in a box. The box one is still sealed. If the first one dies, I open the box. If the second one dies, I guess I'm done. Unless I buy a third, which I probably will. They're cheap now. Might as well.
The price of insurance. A spare drive is $50. The photos are priceless. The math is easy. And that's the same math that keeps the Japanese market alive. The discs are cheap, the recorders are available, and the value of the data justifies the investment.
The open question is whether this holdout collapses as streaming catalogs improve, or whether it persists as a permanent niche for archivists and collectors. My guess is the latter. The collecting culture is too entrenched, and the archival use case is too real. The market will shrink, but it won't vanish.
The MDIC might actually grow, as more people realize that cloud storage is a subscription and hard drives fail. The appeal of a 100-year disk gets stronger. The data storage problem isn't going away; it's getting worse. The MDIC is one of the few answers that doesn't require ongoing payment or ongoing maintenance.
Burn it, label it, store it, forget it. That's the pitch. And it's a pitch that works in Japan because the culture already understands it. The rest of the world is slowly catching up.
The next time you see a fax machine or a Blu-ray, ask what problem it's solving that the cloud can't. The answer is usually more interesting than you'd expect.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping the show running and for the sealed drive in the box.
This has been My Weird Prompts, the Human AI Collaboration Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, email us at show@myweirdprompts.com with your own weird prompt. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the closest.
from sloth, from man, from long. It holds my windpromes. Until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.